members on the Board of Executive Clemency and the Honorable Ms. Woodhouse will chair the hearing at this time, sir, so just please hold on, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, as Dr. Wright just stated, for a 412B type of parole, which is parole to a consecutive sentence, or absolute discharge this morning. You became eligible for this, or you will become eligible in just a few days, about 4 days. April 28th, 2018 was your eligibility date. We'll start with a quick summary. It appears that Mr. Rodriguez is 50 years old, serving 25 years to life for the crime of murder in the first degree, and he has a consecutive sentence for burglary in the first degree of 18 years. So this parole today would be equivalent to that sentence, is what we're here for today. This crime occurred on August 26th, 1988, when he was approximately 21. Is that right, Mr. Rodriguez? You were about 21? Okay. And he was convicted by jury trial on May 7th, 2001, and sentenced on January 28th, 2003. It appears that he had been, at one point there was an appeal and the case was remanded for a new trial. Is that true, sir?
Twice,
okay. Okay, I wasn't sure. It's kind of a little bit confusing in the paperwork. But that resulted in this conviction that you're here for today. He has a criminal history that dates back from 1980 as a juvenile for vandalism, and I believe that was here. And then 1985, his adult record includes disorderly conduct, trespassing, assault, domestic violence, DUI, was hit and run, carried a concealed weapon, indecent exposure, assault, disorderly conduct, and a failed to pay a fine. His prison record has been pretty good. It only has one major, and that was in April of 2009. And the indication we have is that was for stalking. So what was that? What was that major about?
The matter was called a stalking, but I didn't understand it myself.
What
happened in therapy?
It was in therapy group that happened?
Yes, and then after, like, a day after, I was called in and I was let go of the group, and then I was charged with that. But I didn't understand the reason for it, you know?
Okay.
I thought it was because I got upset in group.
And that may be it. That may be if they thought you were upset, maybe someone felt threatened. I don't know either, since we were not there. It looks like your most recent discipline, though, sir, was in January of 2015, and that was for possession of drugs, but it was informal resolution. Do you remember what happened there? January?
Another inmate took prescription pills from my cell. They were ibuprofens, I think, and he had a headache.
Okay.
And they had my name on them.
Okay.
So they just told me to lock up my pills.
Right, and that's why it's informal resolution, because it was just somebody took your ibuprofen. Okay. All right. This looks like this is Mr. Rodriguez's first hearing before the board. Is that true, sir? You have been before the board before?
Yes, my first hearing.
All right. Okay. And I'm not sure, we didn't get a sheet, but are there any supporters today for Mr. We have some supporters. Mr. Rodriguez, you have supporters in the room.
You have to give us the sheet, though.
We didn't get the sheet, so we don't know your name. We have how many? Five? Five supporters for Mr. Rodriguez? Six?
Actually, seven.
Seven. Okay. All right, Mr. Rodriguez, you have seven supporters here today. That's excellent. Okay. All right, so, and will you all want to speak, or do you want to, some of you want to speak, or you're more than welcome to do that when the time comes. But you can think about it, and then when we get there, you can certainly come up and speak. Let's see, it looks like there may be restitution owed in this crime. Are you aware? It looks like there are possibly $2,758 owed. Does that sound right?
Yeah. Yeah, I believe that's what it was.
Okay, so...
2750 something.
Okay. So that's still one of the things we want to make note of. It looks like you've completed, while you're in prison, you did some of the sex offender treatment program. Did you do the whole... Is that like three sections, right? Is it...
Yes.
Did you do the whole course or part of it?
I did, at GU, I did a whole year, and then that was a completed program.
Okay.
And then I came over here and I did maintenance program.
Perfect. Okay. All right. So, yeah, it is a multi-part program. I never know exactly how many parts it is, but you did more than a year on that, so that's excellent. You also, it looks like you took Thinking for Change for one of your classes, and custodial. Did you take some custodial, like vocational training?
Yes, I did.
And what else? Anything else that you took?
Those are, you see, Thinking Straight.
Thinking Straight.
Quite a few programs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Domestic violence programs.
Okay. All right. I'll make a note of these here. Okay. And since this is a parole to a consecutive sentence, we don't have any release plans, and that's understandable, so it's kind of not applicable at this time. So Mr. Rodriguez, I don't know if this is your first time before the board, so we'd just like to get to know you a little bit. And hear from you. Can you start by just telling us what happened the day of the crime? What was going on in your life? What was going on in your head that day? Tell us about that.
At that time I was really young, I guess.
Yeah, you're 21.
And I had a drinking problem and a drug problem. I had been drinking for a few days, did you want a description or what happened the day?
Tell us what happened. What happened that day?
You see, I met the victim down here, and I met her in front of her apartment the day of. You see, it was in the afternoon, and she invited me over to come over like at night to drink. Mm-hmm. Now, I told her I might, but I have to work. And I wasn't gonna go over, but then I decided I wasn't, like later on at night, I was drinking, so I did go over. And this was like really late, like 1 a.m. Mm-hmm. And I knocked on her door, and she was away drinking, but she was alone. And when I knocked, she opened the door, and she was like undressed. Like, just had a gown over, but just completely undressed, naked.
Uh-huh.
And she invited me in, and so I went in, and we were just, you know, drinking, and we started kissing, and we ended up on her bed, because she had been drinking so much, she kind of like gagged, like she was gonna throw up, and I just got up, and I asked her, "You all right?" And she goes, "Yeah." But I was really like grossed out, like, because I thought she was gonna vomit. So I stayed up, and she got up and she drank some more vodka, and she was like trying, you know, to kiss me still, and I was just like really not into it anymore because of what she had. And I was getting ready to leave, and she was telling me, no, come on, stay. I'm like, you know, I wasn't into it, so I was gonna leave already. And she grabbed my arm and turned me around, and she slapped me. And when she slapped me, I hit her. And once I did that, I just kept on hitting her, and some like rage came over me, and I started, you know, I went mad.
Okay.
And I couldn't stop myself. I was just like, once it happened, it just happened like really fast. And I thought she was like, she was dead already, and I got up and I wanted to leave, and I looked out the window and there was somebody out there, so I didn't leave. I just stayed in there. I was scared because I thought I was going to get caught, and so I didn't know what to do. I was just, you know, in the room, just like, oh my God, you know, I'm going to get caught for this. And so I went back to her, and I was just like mad at her because look what you made me do, you know. And I ended up grabbing the handle of a knife that was broke, that had been broken during the attack. And I inserted that in her. And there was also a curling iron right next to her, and I inserted that in her too. And finally, I was just like, I got up and I went to the window again, and they were gone. So I just ran out of there, scared, and I just ran home.
Okay, sir. And so during your course of your sex offender treatment, did you come to an understanding of what made you do a thing like that?
I don't necessarily think like I think prior things led up to that, you know, like I had issues that just I hadn't resolved. Like, I didn't know how to deal with certain issues as far as like, communication or any of that. I never was taught how to resolve my problems other than, you know, like, if you hit me, I'm going to hit you back. And that's just the way I guess I learned it, like, from seeing my parents fight all the time. So I think, like, given the chance to look back and sort of go look back in and think about things, there's just, I guess, you know, certain issues I could have addressed before all this, before the drugs, before the, you know, the drinking. Because I don't think the drugs and the drinking had it. Well, of course that had something to do with it, but it didn't necessarily make me do that.
Okay, so, all right. So what's different about you now? That was a long time ago. What's different about you now?
Wow. Age.
Yeah, we're all getting older, aren't we?
Well, when you're that age, there's certain, to me anyway, the way I looked at life, the things I desired, the things that drove me, were much different than the things that drive me now. Because I think back and to those days, and I was just like foolish of what I thought was important, which now are meaningless.
So what do you think's important now?
Family, raising a... I actually thought when I was younger that because I was providing money and in that way, I thought like that was what my family needed. But when my daughter came to visit me one time and asked me how come I didn't stop doing drugs when she was born, that really hurt me, and it made me think that what she wanted was me to spend time with them, and I just, instead of doing that, I was out trying to, you know, make some money instead of spending time with them. So I think, you know, spending time with family is a lot more important than money or things, material things anyway.
Okay, sir, and that is a good insight to have. You mentioned drugs. Now, what kind of drugs were you using?
Cocaine.
Oh, cocaine. Is that?
Yes.
That's pretty much it? You limited it to cocaine, or were there other drugs?
That was it, just cocaine.
Okay, all right. Get out of that. I'm going to see if any of my fellow board members have questions for you. Mr. Quinones has questions for you.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
According to Ames, you still have an ICE detainer. Are you aware of that?
Yes.
If it ever came to you being released back to the community, because I recognize that this is a 412B hearing for parole to your next consecutive sentence, to consider that, how would you deal with that issue? Do you still have support in Mexico?
Yes, I have relatives and all over Sonora, from what I've told from my dad and mom, that they always helped me out.
And this is just a curiosity now, but how long have you been in the United States? How old were you when you came here?
It was about 2.5 or whatever.
Oh, okay.
That was 167, and I saw that it was like about 69 when my dad brought us over.
And so, pretty much, you grew up in the United States.
Yes.
I guess my last question is has to do with escalating violence. It seems that you had some assault charges leading up to this offense. So, what kind of incidents were those? Were you getting more and more violent leading up to this event?
From my recollection, there were domestic violence once with when I was in relationship with my wife or my first relationship with my first baby's mom. It was issues with them, and yeah, you know, I know I did. I was really bad at relationships.
I guess I know you mentioned that you were drinking, and I'm trying to be, the word I use is clinical about this, like looking at it, I'm not a counselor, but to look at it from a kind of a clinical angle, but I'm trying to understand what would lead to such a violent attack on your victim, the numerous stab wounds. It's hard for me to understand.
I guess it was I wouldn't know. I'm just guessing that it was just built up anger that I just never let out, that I never vented with or addressed any of it. That's all I can think of.
Well, thank you for your directness. Thank you, Ms. Whitnell.
Sure. Any other questions? Mr. Johnson has a question for you.
Sir, Mr. Quinones was asking you some questions, but according to the information we have, I'm just going to go through some of it. It doesn't necessarily mean that you were convicted, but there's some allegations that were made. I'm going to go back to in Tucson in May of 1985. You were arrested for disorderly conduct and criminal trespassing by the Tucson Police Department. It states in here that you allegedly appeared at the home of your estranged girlfriend. Although repeatedly asked to leave by a roommate, you allegedly kept pounding on the door asking to talk to the mother of your child. Then you allegedly yelled through a window threatening to get her. Then it says in March of 86, you were arrested for assault, domestic violence, assault and obstructing justice. And that says that police reports it alleged that you beat your ex-girlfriend, the mother of your first child, after forcing your way into the house. Her roommate was also a victim of the assault. Then in 1988, you had the driving under the influence, a hit and run accident and carrying a concealed weapon. And it states that you hit a building and hid your car prior to police arrival. Also reported that you were in the possession of a small kitchen knife that it was in your rear pocket. And then it says in August of 88, a female 30 years of age and a resident of a large apartment complex where the defendant lived complained that you had been following her around the apartment complex. On the day she was in the complex laundry room, you appeared at the window with your pants and underwear lowered and erect penis in full view, and you motioned her to come to him and then left when she threatened to call the police. You ran to your apartment, and which the victim later pointed out to the police, you were arrested in the apartment and identified the victim. And then in 90, there's a case that says it was this. It was dismissed, but you allegedly went to your estranged wife's house while intoxicated, punched her in the jaw and kicked her repeatedly. Says that you held her down and allegedly attempted to smother her with the pillows. Police subsequently sent her to a hospital where she was admitted into the hospital, and you were gone upon arrival. And you were later arrested at your parents' home where you were living. And then in 1990, it's still in Tucson. It says you allegedly followed your estranged wife to a new residence and harassed her. You threatened to get her when she left the residence. You allegedly followed her around, trying to run her off the road. When you followed her to a convenience market, some bystanders called the police. And then again in July of 90, it says that there's allegedly came to his estranged wife's house and pounded on the door until she answered. Then you physically abused her. The reason I'm going over some of these things, that there's a violent past that you had of abusing women, and your statement earlier that when you went to the victim's house, which you were incarcerated for, that you was angry because of what she had made you do. But it just appears that you have a history of being angry and violent and being very aggressive toward females. That you were dating, and that particular incident, you stayed in that apartment for a while, and you inflicted some real heinous crimes on her with sticking a curling iron, you know, in her vagina, and the handle of a knife in her vagina. She was stabbed numerous times, stabbed in the neck with a knife. That the knife went through and hit the ball. I'm trying to understand, you know, what have you done to control this history of anger that you've actually had, sir? That's the concern that I have.
Well, the only thing I can say is I'm trying to get a better understanding of what's causing these problems. Mm-hmm. Now, I only take the programs that are provided to me, and I know that the drugs and alcohol contributed to all my issues, all these domestic violence, all these outbursts. They were all done under the influence. So I know that that's something that's a big issue to me, that I need to never again drink or go near drugs, because that's the only times that I've ever had outbursts or rage or any issues with breaking the law or any kind of violence.
Okay, so you still don't know what the actual trigger is, that other than the being intoxicated is what triggers the violence?
Well, I think there's other triggers. I have to recognize when certain issues present themselves, being lonely, being rejected, I have to recognize that those issues and deal with them instead of not communicating with somebody, not talking to somebody about them, because then it just ends up a lot worse down the road.
So did you have any remorse after this incident occurred with the victim that you're currently in custody for?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I felt horrible. I mean, I numerous times I wanted to turn myself in and deal with it. But as time went on, it was just like harder for me to turn myself in. And I let it go. But never did I stop thinking about what I did.
Okay. So it's
to this day.
So it says 4 years and 8 months went by before someone turned you in. Did you start telling people about what you did, or were you bragging about it, or what happened?
I definitely wasn't bragging, but I was. I did tell others, you know, that about what I did, and I felt horrible about what I did, and I wanted to turn myself in, and I was told to not turn myself in, that I have to wait for them to come to me. And I was just like, I took that advice and didn't turn myself in. But I definitely never bragged about it.
So why did you tell other people about it?
Because I felt horrible about it.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to get some insight. I guess, what should I do? Should I turn myself in? How do I go about dealing with it? Because I was having problems sleeping. You know, I was just, I felt really bad about what I'd done.
Okay, so you do have a good release plan, and I see that you do have letters in here in the file that you, I believe it was, that you got letters of support from your family. You have taken some programs since you had the opportunity to get incarcerated, but I didn't see a lot that appears that there's some anger problems, that when you get intoxicated, you get angry, and you know, trying to control that you continue to do that. I see that exactly. Originally, I guess twice, they sentenced you to the death sentence, and that was appealed, and you wind up getting the life sentence. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Rodriguez, tell us about your family. Do you have children, and tell us about them.
I have 2 daughters, Micaela and Lolita. Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to put you on the spot. Ask them, tell us how old they are. You may not be able to figure that out quickly, but they're adults, I assume, adult daughters.
Yes, sir. I have 9 grandkids, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 9 grandkids, and the latest one. So there's 9 grandkids.
Okay. And do they come and visit you there, or at least your daughters, or do you just talk to them on the phone, or?
I talk to them on the phone, and they do come visit, not as often as they used to, but they, you know, they got their families
to deal with.
Yeah. Yes. So I try and write to them as often as I can, and they do write. So we do communicate.
Good. Okay. Well, that's important. As you said, you changed your mind about what's important in life, and that is important.
Yes.
All right, sir. I'm going to give your supporters an opportunity. If anybody who'd like to come up and say something, you're most welcome to. Anybody want to say something? Okay, they're lending their support from the gallery. So hope you can feel their support for you. But we do have seven people here for you today. All right, Mr. Rodriguez, we're coming toward the end of your hearing then. If no board members have further questions. Dr. Wright has a question for you.
Real brief, and I know that you have no control over the question that I'm going to ask, and we have no control over it, but what would your real release plan be if you have this ICE detainer? Would you prefer, if you were released, or when you were released, going to Mexico, or would you prefer remaining in the United States if you had a choice, sir?
Well, if I had a choice, I'd prefer remaining in the United States. I've already signed the deportation papers, so I don't think I have a choice.
Okay. And your family, what family do you have in Mexico, sir? I know you have family here. I see some of them in the room at this time. But what family do you have in Mexico?
Relatives, cousins, lots of friends.
And what would you do in Mexico? What would you do in Mexico if ICE were to send you to Mexico, sir? What would you do? What would your plans be?
Well, my dad had a little shop up there, a store, a secondhand store. That would be my first, I guess, plan would be to go there and help him run that. Aside from that, I'm a really good mechanic. I would love to open up my own auto shop at some point.
Okay, so I'm just going to be very brief now. I think when you was talking to Honorable Mr. Johnson, you indicated that you had some type of psychological evaluation over the years. I don't know whether recently or a long time ago. Were you ever placed on any type of medication to deal with your problem, sir?
No
medication. And my final question is, I think when you was talking to Mr. Johnson, you indicated that that you was talking to somebody and they told you not to turn yourself in. I'm not asking for a name, but who would these people tell you not to turn yourself in, sir? I mean, were they relatives, friends, or just people on the corner? Who was giving you that type of advice, sir?
Well, relatives and one of them, a friend.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Rodriguez. Thank you so very much, Honorable Mr.
Mr. Neal has a question for you as well.
Yeah, just a little bit of clarification here. In your criminal history, there's a couple of them that talks about that you had domestic violence problems with your ex-girlfriend, and it indicates that she was the mother of your first child. And the next reference to domestic violence is your estranged wife. Are those two different women, or are they the same woman?
They're two different women.
Okay. And are you still married to the lady that you were having the DV problems with in 1990?
No, we got divorced, I think, 2001.
Okay. All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Okay, Mr. Rodriguez, I do want to make a note for the record that we do have a letter from the Pima County Attorney's Office, and they write letters for many hearings and express an opinion. And this one is dated April 17th, 2018, and it leaves a very detailed description of the crime, which you told us a pretty detailed description. This specifically mentions that she had 49 wounds to her body, were quite serious, 13 stab wounds and 13 wounds in her neck. The one thing I do want to mention is a pathologist estimated that the victim may have survived for 15 or 30 minutes before she died. So she had all of those injuries, including, as you mentioned, the broken knife handle and the curling iron that you had inserted in her and left it plugged in. So she had all of that, and the pathologist thinks she lived for another 15 to 30 minutes. So I did want to make sure that got on the record, that the judge at the time thought it was a particularly heinous, cruel, or depraved crime. But at this time, Mr. Rodriguez, we're coming toward the end of your hearing. I want to give you the opportunity to make a final statement. If you could, anything that you want to tell us that you haven't already told us. Maybe you've thought of some things while we talk. Is there anything else you'd like to tell the board, sir?
I guess not. I don't know what to say.
Okay. Well, what's your time?
Well, you know, I can't go back and change what happened. And I know it was something really bad, and I'll have to learn to live with what I've done. And I just, you know, I can't change what I did.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, sir. I know it's kind of hard. This is your first hearing, and you're probably a little nervous, and it's just fine.
Yes.
Okay, sir. Well, here's how these hearings work. We do all of our discussion in public. We've not talked about your case before right now in this room. So what we'll do is the board's going to discuss among itself, and we just ask that you stay on the phone, remain silent, and we'll ask the folks in the room same thing, just remain silent, and the board will discuss, and we'll be right back to you with a decision, sir. Okay? All right. Thank you so much. The board is now in discussion. Mr. Rodriguez is certainly a very polite and very nice individual. He seems to have a handle on the changes in himself over the years. Does tend to blame the violence on chemicals, alcohol or cocaine use. He's definitely making progress, you know, as far as his thinking process. He's told us that has changed from what was important back then to what is important now is his family, and that certainly is. I think many of us come to that realization as we get older. I'm just concerned, and I think it was Mr. Johnson that just brought up the kind of escalating violence, and the fact that there's no, I acknowledge the sex offender treatment was completed the whole full year with the maintenance afterwards, which is very good. It's a very good program. There's nothing, I don't see any anger management. I'm just not sure that the anger issue has been addressed yet. But I'm willing to listen to any insights that other board members have had about this. Mr. Quinones?
Thank you, Ms. Woodhouse. Just for discussion, I want to share that I learned many years ago in advanced investigative training that there's something disconcerting about a person that is very open about a violent crime, such as murder, but is vague about the details of the heinous act itself. And it's raising concerns for me regarding public safety as whether or not we can consider parole to the next consecutive sentence. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Neal?
Yes, I just want to make sure it gets on the record, a little information. So far in the hearing, the only thing mentioned about the victim was that she was attacked and killed. We basically got all the information that's out there, but real briefly, I know she's graduated with honors from Southern California High School, published poet. She went to community college for 2 years, then business college. She worked for the sheriff's department at one time. She was a legal secretary. She moved to Tucson and met and married her husband. They were separated at the time he left, but the couple had produced a female child who, in 2002, graduated from college. So the child was greatly traumatized by her mother's death, and she had extensive psychological counseling since that time. So there was quite a bit more than just a dead person involved on the victim's side. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. And it is important often when we don't have a victim's representative here, but we never want to forget that there were victims in the crime and that there were many more victims than just Ms. Deering. There were her children, her family, her husband. So thank you for reminding me of that. Any other comments from board members? Okay, I'm going to offer a motion then, and that is to deny 412B, which is called a consecutive sentence, or absolute discharge for Mr. Rodriguez, and that would be ADC number 102946.
Second.
Agreed?
Agreed.
Okay. So I denied and seconded by Dr. Wright, agreed by Mr. Johnson, Mr. Neal, Mr. Quinones. The crime occurred in 1988, so that would be eligible for a one-year set-off.
Agreed.
Marking here, let's see. Okay. And the reasons for denial, serious and violent offense, loss of human life, serious and deviant offense, trauma to the victim, serious bodily injury, I'm going to say victim harassment, and mostly because the victim was still alive for quite some time after. History of assaultive behavior, specifically relating to the assaults in the past and the domestic violence issues that kind of escalating. Prior criminal history. Certainly his institutional behavior has been excellent, and I hope he continues with that. He has a very good, his release plan, his parole plan is very impressive. He has a wonderful family support system. They're here. And I'm going to check lack of programming, but mostly what I'm concerned about is specific anger, that type of programming to not just react and respond. Can anyone think of anything else that should be checked? Okay, back to you, Mr. Rodriguez. You heard the board's discussion, and the board has voted for the moment, for now, to deny your parole to consecutive sentence or for absolute discharge. And did you hear the reasons for the denial, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so the department will certify you again to come before this board. It may be the same people, it may be different people. We sometimes change, you may want to, you know, look for continued programming, especially if you can find some anger management, might be a good thing to look at. But the board will recertify you in approximately a year. It won't be to the date, but it'll be about a year from now. And we'll be happy to see you again in a year, sir. So thank you very much for your participation. You've been very polite and courteous, and we always appreciate that. So thank you, sir, and your hearing is concluded.
Sir, would you put the CLC back on the phone, sir?